Today, the housing market sheep and goats, which are you? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Well, data from my surveys as discussed this past week, along with other market data, shows that we have a very divided housing market, with on one side of the ledger, many households under significant pressure and some being forced to sell up while watching their property values slide, while on the other side, property investors are still piling to compete with owner-occupied buyers, especially at the lower end of the market and bidding prices higher. Actually, of course, there are many micro markets across the country, and so any headline data on rises or falls masks important differences. Housing isn't just the great Australian barbecue stopper, it's our greatest pain point as well. All of this comes only days after Australia's GDP figures grew at the lowest rate in 3 decades, it's the COVID-19 pandemic, and as traders pushed out rate expectations well into next year. So today, I'll be looking at the latest signals from the data relating to mortgage prisoners, forced sales, credit growth, and investor activity to provide context for the misleading headlines that we see splashed all over the property portals. As I discussed yesterday, we have stubbornly high inflation with a significant whiff of stagflation as the economy is stuck in the slow lane overseen by a central bank that may well still need to increase rates again. Little wonder then that consumer confidence is as low as it's been since the 1990s recession. And Morgan Stanley's annual survey of more than 2,000 consumers suggests that this is negatively translating into action. For the first time in the survey's 7-year history, a majority of respondents, that's 52%, say that the financial stress will cause them to reduce their spending. It's no surprise that lower and middle-income groups are under the most pressure. But it's notable that consumers aged 30 to 49 are also feeling the most financial stress. It's middle Australia that's hurting, and a big reason is house prices. Now, all of this correlates quite well with the data that I shared recently from my surveys. The Reserve Bank, of course, has delivered 13 interest rate rises since May 2022, and household debt payments have continued to rise as a share of income. The Morgan Stanley data shows the proportion of households paying their mortgage ahead of schedule has dropped from 56.5% 2 years ago to 44.1% now, and mortgage arrears are rising from low levels, particularly in Victoria, where the jumps are most pronounced. Even more noticeable are the signs that higher rates are crimping the supply of credit, with a survey pointing to an increasing propensity to refinance loans or to switch lenders in response to higher rates. But changing lenders or hunting for a better deal is no easy feat. The share of households that reportedly experienced difficulty getting a mortgage was a staggering 82%, the highest in the survey's history. It was 91% for middle-income earners, by the way, with the proportion rejected outright by one or more lenders surging from 11% in 2019 to 22% in 2024. Morgan Stanley's equity strategist Chris Reed said high house prices are a key source of stress for those wanting to refinance or switch lenders. But herein lies the bind that many households appear to find themselves in. House prices are at record levels and likely to stay there. The survey shows that 75% of respondents expect prices to rise in the next 12 months. That's up from 58% 2 years ago, and the highest level of positive price expectations in the survey's history. But because prices are so high and interest rates elevated compared with recent history, and loans are difficult to secure, households increasingly believe they are stuck. The percentage of respondents likely to buy this year has fallen from 35% in 2022 to 27% now, and down sharply from the peak of 44% in 2017. Selling intentions are largely unchanged at 34% remaining around record lows. The idea that Australia was home to a rump of mortgage prisoners hit the headlines 12 months ago when National Australia Bank revealed that about a fifth of its customers were trapped in their current loan. That is, they could not switch banks because higher interest rates prevented them from clearing serviceability buffers to a new lender. The Morgan Stanley data suggests a new group of quasi-mortgage prisoners have emerged. These households may be able to secure a new loan, albeit with difficulty, according to the survey, but they seemingly must feel little desire to buy or sell in a market where their next purchase is out of reach. So they're likely to stay put, which means volumes in the housing market remains depressed and supports higher prices. And that could remain solid. Morgan Stanley expects price growth will moderate as immigration slows, the labour market softens, and listings gradually pick up. But Reed said changes are happening slowly, and in the meantime, price increases are likely to continue, which is a positive for household wealth, but further underpins a sticky inflation pulse. The Morgan Stanley data suggests two things could change the housing market setup: a cut in interest rates, which would take some strain off housing finances, and or a lift in housing supply. Unfortunately, as we've discussed previously, the supply outlook is very poor. Building approvals data fell again in April, with approvals running at an annualized rate of just 157,000, well short of both the decade average of 205,000 and the run rate of 240,000 that the federal government needs to meet its target of building 1.2 million homes over the next 5 years, starting from July 1. AMP Chief Economist Shane Oliver says the shortfall of houses sits at around 200,000, but is probably more like 300,000, given the trend towards smaller households. Morgan Stanley also does not expect much relief in interest rates anytime soon. It has long maintained that the combination of better-than-expected strength in the labour market, government spending, and the likelihood that other central banks need to keep rates higher for longer means the near-term risk is that rates may need to go higher. And ultimately, though, we think the bar for the RBA to restart tightening remains high and would require a more persistent lift in inflation, which we don't expect, Reed says. We continue to see the first cut in February 2025, with two further cuts through the year to leave the cash rate at 3.6%. The combination of those cuts and the Stage 3 tax cuts in July would provide some cushion for households. The tax cuts will inject around $20 billion per annum into the economy, which Morgan Stanley says will offset about half of the increase in net interest payments that have come from the RBA rate rises over the past 18 months. But of course, it's not equally spread across all households. And it's also worth noting that the savings buffers built up by households during COVID are rapidly being depleted. The mean value of total household deposits has dropped to a five-year low, with an average household holding somewhere around $59,000. But Reed says 43% of respondents had less than $25,000 in the bank, up from 30% in 2021 and 32% in 2022. Reed sees an economy where spending is not savings-driven, but income-driven. That will weigh on discretionary spending, but it will also likely keep inflation sticky as households increase spending on essentials in line with rising prices. The RBA's position in all of this remains extremely difficult. While rate cuts would give relief to households feeling financial stress, they would also likely stimulate housing demand from the large cohort of households who feel locked into their current loan, putting more upward pressure on record house prices. In addition, households are increasingly cutting back on loan repayments or drawing down on offset accounts, and that's a sign that weak growth is affecting family budgets. While housing credit is re-accelerating, the number of new loans remains low, according to brokers who conclude that existing mortgages are blowing out amid broader pressure on household spending and little indication that the Reserve Bank will lower rates. But with rates still high in Australia, Baron Joey Capital Partners banking analyst John Mott told clients that a mismatch between overall credit growth and new lending flow points to lower repayments from borrowers. He said that while housing credit accelerated to 0.45% during April, the strongest in almost 2 years, new lending flows had stalled since November when the RBA hiked interest rates to a decade high of 4.35%. We believe this reflects a reduction in mortgage paydowns, Mr. Mott said. With many households under financial stress, we believe mortgagors will be reducing excess payments, withdrawing prepayments, or extending the term of their loans. This may be another indicator of mortgage stress as higher rates bite more leveraged households, the analyst continued. RBA Governor Michelle Bullock even told a Senate Estimates hearing this week that she wouldn't hesitate to move and raise interest rates again if needed, only hours before the Bank of Canada cut interest rates. While the inflation target is 2% in Canada, the RBA is between 2 and 3%, and headline inflation came in at 3.6% in the year to March in Australia. Households are increasingly feeling the pinch from higher rates, with major banks reporting a rise in delinquent home loans, albeit off a low base, in their recent half-year financial reporting season. National Australia Bank, for example, reported that 30-day delinquencies jumped by a third to 1.65% of its housing portfolio in the 12 months to March, while ANZ, the 30-day overdue rate, was around 1.5% of its book, and Westpac revealed its proportion of 30-day arrears went from 1.5% to 1.8% of its housing portfolio between September and March. The bank added, however, that nearly two-thirds of its borrowers were still ahead of repayments by a month or so at its interim results last month. Rate City researcher Eddie Tyndall said that there was likely to have been an increase in borrowers on interest-only and other hardship arrangements as rates remain elevated. The last quarter of data didn't show anything major, though. Certainly arrears are on the rise, but still below historical averages, and we don't see a noticeable tick up in interest-only lending across the whole book. And in fact, Steve Mickenbecker of Canstar said that while there was likely higher levels of mortgage stress in the economy, new Australian Bureau of Statistics lending indicators data ran counter to the Barrenjoey research. That data showed new housing loan commitments were up 4.8% in April to $29.35 billion in the month, higher than the $27.4 billion in November. Those numbers look to be recovering to where they were before the last interest rate increase, Mr. Mickenbecker said. There can be mortgage stress, but there are also people who are able to borrow and to buy property. Sheeps and goats, in other words. Investor lending also continued to outpace owner-occupier lending, according to the ABS Lending Indicators released on Thursday last week. Mish Tan, the agency's head of financial statistics, said that this was down to increasing loan sizes for investors. This likely reflects expectations of higher rental yields and the greater borrowing capacity of investors, Dr. Tan said. In fact, property investor loans in April grew at their fastest pace since before the Reserve Bank began lifting rates, as investor buyers focused on more affordable markets where a lack of stock was pushing up rents and yields. New home loan commitments to investors jumped 5.6% from March, the fastest rate of gain since November 2021, when the benchmark lending rate was just 0.1%, according to the ABS statistics. Housing values jumped 6.1% in Perth, 4.3% in Adelaide, and 3.9% in Brisbane over the 3 months to May, according to CoreLogic data, reflecting the appetite for homes in those mid-tier cities. That's according to Commonwealth Bank senior economist Belinda Allen. There's no end to price impacts from the lack of supply and strong demand. It's economics 101, Ms. Allen said. Owner-occupiers and investors are searching for more affordable housing, and this is probably stronger in the investor space at the moment. Investors are making choices based on where they're expecting the housing market to go. A separate report by consultancy Urbis this week showed interstate investors flocked to the Gold Coast, where 41% of off-the-plan sales in March were to investors. Oxford Economics Australia senior economist Marie Kilroy said Perth was also a key market for investors. Its rental market vacancy rates is lowest in the capital cities, which is pushing up rents. And now the prices are starting to kick through too, because rental growth is strong, Ms. Corey said. Ms. Allen said housing demand was holding up stronger than expected earlier in the year, when CBA economists were forecasting a national 5% increase in housing values. We had thought that the RBA would cut more aggressively. We've shifted that back. But having seen what the market's doing, we would still say there's an upside risk to that 5% view. The bank has not adjusted its forecast, nor has it yet made public its housing price forecast for 2025, by the way. CoreLogic figures this week showed rents were rising at a faster pace than home values, and gross rental yields had continued to trend higher, rising to 3.56% across the combined capitals. That's the highest gross yield since August 2019. Market demand remains strong amid a lack of supply of advertised housing stock, despite higher interest rates and consumer pessimism, Ms. Allen said. The recovery, meanwhile, also lifted Sydney's median home value back to $1.156 million, matching the record set in January 2022 before the value dropped 12.4%, according to CoreLogic. And Thursday's numbers also showed new loan commitments for the construction of new homes grew at their fastest rate in more than 3 years. Owner-occupier new loan commitments for new dwelling construction jumped 6% from March to $1.8 billion. That was the biggest monthly gain since January 2021, when they leapt 20% to a monthly total of $4 billion. New loan commitments for alterations and additions also rose for a fourth straight month to $694 million. That's a record high. And owner-occupier refinancing existing loans, meanwhile, fell 1.3% in April to $17.8 billion. The total has declined for 8 of the past 12 months. Now, here's another signal, though. The proportion of homes resold within 2 years of purchase has soared in parts of regional Queensland, Brisbane and Perth, much of that sparked by the recent capital gain windfalls, according to data from CoreLogic again. However, in some cases, the sharp increase in mortgage repayments since May 2022 could have also prompted some recent home buyers to sell up. Analysis by Moody's Ratings showed regional areas racked up the highest mortgage delinquency rates in the country, where lower disposable incomes and less economic diversity than major cities means home loan borrowers were more vulnerable to the effects of high interest rates and cost of living pressures. Regional Queensland posted the highest proportion of short-term resales, with more than 1 out of 8 properties sold within 2 years of purchase. Across regional South Australia, regional Western Australia, and regional Tasmania, more than 1 out of 10 were resold within 2 years. In the capital cities, Brisbane recorded the highest proportion of properties flipped within 2 years at 10.4%, followed by Perth and Adelaide at 8.5% and 8.6% respectively. People who might be struggling with mortgage repayments may have decided to sell, said Eliza Owen, CoreLogic head of research. However, the biggest lift in short-term resales is generally associated with large price increases, especially in relatively cheap markets. So this could infer that owners are cashing in on value gains to buy somewhere more expensive or desirable. Of the top 50 suburbs with the biggest increase in two-year resales, half were in regional Queensland, including 7 in Wide Bay and 5 suburbs in Mackay, Isaac, Whitsunday. Howard, Moore Park Beach and Aldershot in the Wide Bay area posted between 17 and 25.6 percentage points increase in the proportion of short-term resales in the past 2 years, taking the average share to around 30% of all sales. Recent home buyers also offloaded their problems in droves across Mackay Harbour, Seaforth and Laguna Keys in the Mackay-Isaac-Whitsunday region. In the past 2 years, the proportion of short-term resales in those towns ballooned by as much as 25.6 percentage points to 25%. Evanston, north of Adelaide, topped the suburbs with the highest increase in the proportion of properties resold within 2 years. In the past 12 months, nearly 1 out of 3 properties sold in the suburb. They were only held for 2 years, an increase of 26.7 percentage points during April 2022. During the same period, home values jumped by 29.8%, taking the median value to $538,000. Short-term resales also rose sharply in Perth's southeastern suburbs like Bedford Dale, Hilbert, and Signalton in the southwest, where it jumped up by 25 percentage points. In the last 2 years, home values in those suburbs increased by 28.1%, 48.1%, and 31% respectively. While some sellers in those suburbs could be cashing in on their recent windfalls, some could be selling due to mortgage stress. Moody's Ratings report showed the proportion of mortgage arrears have blown out in Perth's southeast to 5.33% of all mortgages in November last year, nearly double the rate compared to the previous year. And mortgage delinquencies also ballooned in outback Queensland, outback Northern Territory, and the Wheat Belt in WA, where more than 3% of all mortgage holders were falling behind with their repayments. And a separate analysis by S&P showed property investors were also feeling the strain of the sharp increase in mortgage repayments, particularly those in Sydney and Melbourne, where large home loans were needed to buy a property. In Sydney's outer southwest, 2.6% of investors in the area were behind with their repayments as at March 2024. Across the Outer West and Blue Mountains, Parramatta, Southwest, Inner Southwest, North Sydney and Hornsby, more than 1.25% of all investors were in arrears, and meanwhile delinquencies sat at 2.01% for all investors in Melbourne's North East. Aaron Kitson, S&P's analyst, said some investors may have already sold to avoid falling deep into arrears. I think that we've seen in recent months some stabilisation in the investor arrears that is potentially a reflection of some landlords who are financially stretched deciding to sell without incurring a loss due to price increases, she said. Most investors have both an owner-occupied mortgage and an investment home loan, so if they're feeling financial pressure generally and property prices are improving, they're probably more likely to offload to ease some of that debt. And finally, how does this all play into house prices? Well, according to CoreLogic, house prices jumped more than 10% in the last 3 months across some of the cheaper suburbs in Sydney and Perth as the housing market picked up steam. But at the same time, home values in several of the most expensive suburbs in the country slumped by as much as $388,000 as worsening affordability and significantly reduced borrowing capacity funneled demand towards the lower and middle end segment of the markets. House prices in some of the most expensive suburbs, such as Vaucluse, fell by more than $388,000 in just 3 months, according to CoreLogic. Perth's northeastern and southwestern suburbs led the top performers, with six suburbs ranking up more than 10% home price growth over the last 3 months. Bevish, located 18 kilometres northwest of Perth, posted the sharpest quarterly increase of 11.5%, followed by Orillia in the southwest, with 10.8%, and despite those large gains, their median house values remained affordable at around $700,000 or $500,000 respectively. They're also substantially lower than the $769,000 median home price across the city. Other Perth suburbs, including North Beach, Darlington and Bertram, also notched up more than 10% growth during the same period. House prices in Sydney's outer southwestern suburb Bonnyrigg Heights gained 10.4%, lifting the median by $108,000 to about $1.15 million. That's the only suburb outside Perth to clock up double-digit house price growth. CoreLogic Research Director Tim Lawless said that the lower and middle segment of the housing market would continue to outperform the most expensive suburbs until affordability improves. After recording a higher rate of gain through the early months of the growth cycle, conditions have faded across the upper quartile as borrowing capacity reduced and affordability constraints deflected demand towards middle and lower priced properties, Lawless said. People are buying where they can afford given the sharp decline in serviceability due to higher rates and prices. I think until interest rates fall, the lower to middle end segment of the market will continue to be the sweet spot for most buyers. The lower 25% of the housing market by value recorded a 4.3% increase in the past 3 months across the combined capitals, which is more than five times higher than the gains at the top. House prices in other southwestern Sydney suburbs like Bonnyrigg, Edensor Park, Lansvale, Cabramatta West, Fairfield West, Mount Pritchard and Wakerley also bolted, rising between 6.8% and 8.5% during the same period. Even after notching up those large gains, median values in those suburbs stayed at just over $1 million, well below the $1.4 million median house price across Sydney. In Brisbane, strong demand for affordable suburbs in the Logan region and Northern District, such as Logan Central, McDowell, Chermside West and Chermside, also fueled a steep jump in prices of up to 7.8%. Across Adelaide, house prices in Woodville Park in the city's west climbed by 9.5%, followed by Virginia in the north at 9.1%. An increasing investor activity has also fired up more than 10% jumps in unit values across the cheaper unit markets in Brisbane, Adelaide and Perth. Bethania and Waterford West in the Logan area topped the best performing unit market in the country, gaining 19.4% and 14.7% in just 3 months respectively. Despite the surge in prices, their median stayed though under $450,000. Ascot Park and Morphettville in Adelaide's south followed with 14% and 13.4% respectively, while Perth suburbs like Bicton jumped around 11%. By contrast, the most expensive housing markets in Sydney were among the weakest performers in the past 3 months. House prices in Vaucluse slumped by 4.9%, that's around $388,000 to $7.47 million, and Bayview in the Northern Beaches slumped by 9.5%, that's a drop of about $284,000 to $2.7 million, while Longueville on the lower North Shore tumbled by 4.9%, that's around $250,000 drop to $4.9 million. Palm Beach, Avalon Beach, North Willoughby and Willoughby also fell sharply, with house prices sliding by up to $182,000 in just 3 months. And similar units in Darling Point, where median values were around $2.5 million, recorded a $119,000 decline during the same period. And unit values in Tamarra, Bondi and Bellevue Hill also tumbled by 4.6%, 5.4% and 4.9% respectively. So as we stand back, two quick observations. The correlation between my stress analysis and what's happening to property prices is getting stronger and stronger. In a way, I think my stress analysis is a leading indicator of where prices may move ahead. The second is, there is clearly more than one property market, and there are clearly some people who are still benefiting from the rises and are still able to buy and buy strongly. We also know that some renters are trying to get in and competing with investors and sometimes being priced out. But we also see an increasingly large number of households under pressure, possibly needing to sell, possibly being forced to sell. And whether they are selling because of the capital appreciation that they've got and trying to capture it quickly, or whether they're selling because they know that they have to sell, is a bit of a moot point. Again, in my surveys, I see quite a few people who are in the situation where they are planning to sell and sell quickly because they know they can't afford things to stay the way they are. And by the way, the recent data from APRA showed that whilst banks on hardship schemes gave people some wriggle room for a period or so, after a year or thereabouts, they often have to sell anyway. So the bottom line is this: the property market continues to be one of contrasts. Some people doing well, some people under huge pressure, delinquencies rising, mortgage pressure definitely building. And with the prospect of rates higher for longer, this is only going to get worse ahead. The question will be, of course, whether the net movement is going to actually begin to turn prices south, or whether the high level of demand and low supply and the high migration, which is still stoking demand too, supports the markets, particularly at the low end. Well, in the short term, probably, but in the medium term, that could all change. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.